And the court will proceed to the third case, Steiberg Engineering v. Eaton Corporation. Mr. Bickler?
May it please the court. I'm Robert Bickler, one of the attorneys for the plaintiff appellant, Steiberg. Steiberg is a manufacturer of unique parts pursuant to the customer's specific drawings. In this case, the district court used the mirror image concept for contract formation. The district court ignored the UCC's language on contract formation. The UCC has abolished the mirror image concept on contract formation.
Could I just stop you for a moment, Mr. Bickler, and ask you, what exactly is the deal that you are trying to enforce? Is it a contract for 13,000 units at an average price of $544?
An 88 cents, right? Yes.
If that is the deal, what exactly did Eaton do to manifest an intention to enter into that deal with Steiberg?
Eaton asked Steiberg to give a schedule of installments in a telephone conference of September 1. Steiberg submitted that schedule of installments for the 13,000 units at the average price, and it submitted that to Eaton. Eaton relayed back to Steiberg that that was acceptable and that Eaton needed to get Steiberg up to capacity as soon as possible. That is the completed contract. Thereafter, the parties manifest that contract in a number of ways. Thereafter, each party put the schedule for deliveries into their manufacturing information systems. Thereafter, in the year 2000, Eaton released 240 units for shipment to Eaton, which Steiberg did. Eaton paid for those units consistent with, they were invoiced consistent with the schedule pricing.
Was that a 13,000 total schedule?
Yes, the schedule of September 9, exhibits 15 and 16, are 13,000 units that averaged a price of $544.88.
What were the negotiations going back and forth about having to have more, I guess you'd call it, tooling money, and also that the quantity, 13,000, wasn't enough, that in order to amortize that over the whole product, they needed a lot more than that?
There were two separate things going on. Eaton requested Steiberg to build the tooling for the 13,000 units, which Steiberg did and Eaton paid for. That was all completed. There was a question of whether Eaton was going to want higher volumes than could be produced with the current capital investment. And if Eaton wanted over what currently Steiberg could do with his capital, then either Steiberg or Eaton would have to buy more machines to run out more than the $400 or $500 per month. That concept was discussed in the September 1 conference. Eaton's person said, I don't have authority to go higher. Eaton said to Steiberg, give us your maximum capacity in a schedule with current capital, which Steiberg did in its 9999 schedules, exhibits 15 and 16.
Is that the phone conference, or is there something other than that?
The 9-9, they had a telephone conference on 9-1.
Oh.
And the result of that telephone conference was Steiberg come back to us with the maximum capacity you can produce in installments with the current capital. Steiberg submitted that in a 9-9-99 quotes, exhibits 15 and 16. Then on 9-27, Eaton's buyer said, your quote is acceptable. We need to get you up to capacity as soon as possible.
Is that the Fletcher letter?
That's a Fletcher telephone conversation. The Fletcher letter is July 29th, in which Fletcher writes, Steiberg or Eaton will buy a minimum of 13,000 units at the average price of $544.88. That letter followed a July 8th quotation from Steiberg, in which Steiberg had quoted that it would produce 13,000 units at the average price of $544.88.
Could I just make certain that I understand something? Bottom line, are you saying that Eaton has purchased only 240 brake units?
Yes. They had released another 240 for shipment that were supposed to be added to Eaton on June 5th. They canceled that release in May and have taken no more since.
Okay. So
those were all produced, I presume.
Yes, we have. Steiberg has 345 or 25 units in stock. In addition, it has this filled pipeline that constitutes 13.88% of the work and labor and material for the entire 13,000 unit order.
So in stock right now, sitting there, are 325
completed units,
325.
Plus there's approximately 100,000 parts, components, subcomponents that Steiberg needed to put in a pipeline to be in a position to deliver units as scheduled. And that constitutes 13.88% of the total performance that was required of Steiberg under the 13,000 unit order. So, Judge,
now, are you saying that the other terms in that letter of July 29th, the Fletcher letter, the 1,400 units per month, 4 months of lead time, you're saying that's also a basis of a deal?
Yes, that was a separate contract to produce the tooling needed to make the components for the units.
That's not a counteroffer?
No. That was a totally separate contract. That contract has been performed and paid for, as is summarized in the documents in file, that there was a clarification of the contract terms in a telephone conversation between Fletcher and Baker on August 8th as to exactly how much the tooling would cost, how much it could produce a month.
And is that telephone conversation the subject of the deposition that the late Ms. Fletcher was involved with?
I don't know I understand the question.
She was deposed.
She was deposed and partially deposed. She broke down, she was suffering, and has since died.
Yeah, what I was wondering was whether the 1,400 units per month, 4 months of lead time, you know, were part of that deposition. Because, you know, Eaton is saying that that was a counteroffer, not a contract.
No, what happened in the letter, Steiberg proposed in July 8th, $13,000 for $544.88. Eaton then, on July 23rd, while an Eaton employee was at Steiberg, he was told that unless we have a confirmation, backing up a bit, after the July proposal, Eaton's employee verbally told Steiberg, you got the deal. Brazil is not close yet. And then several days later, an Eaton employee was at Steiberg and didn't have anything in writing. But they had another machine that they ordered that was going to cost them about $250,000. And the chief man at Steiberg said, unless we get a commitment from you, I'm canceling that machine that we need to make your product. Within 3 days of that conversation, Eaton sent the letter which says, we will buy a minimum of 13,000 units at the average price of $544.88. Then, after that, Steiberg bought the machine, took delivery of it on August 27th, and paid the money so they'd be in a position to produce the deal. At that point, I submit, even under common law, consideration transferred. Then the parties had to work out what are going to be acceptable installments. Eaton was optimistic and said in their letter, up to $1,400 a month. And so they had a telephone conversation on September 1, the result of which was that after discussing the possibility of either party putting in more capital, that they would then, Eaton told Steiberg, come back to us with what is your maximum capacity with current capital. And that's reflected in the handwritings of both Baker of Steiberg and Fletcher of Eaton. That caused Steiberg to generate the 9-9 quote. And Eaton said, that's acceptable. And then Steiberg went ahead throughout the beginning of the year 2000 and manufactured the units, components, so that they would be up to capacity with a full pipeline to meet the expectations and their commitment for producing the 13,000 units.
Thank you, Mr. Bickler. Mr. Barreto.
May it please the court, Matthew Barreto for Appellee Eaton Corporation. This matter comes to the court after a full trial on the merits. 4 days of trial, Steinberg presented its witnesses, presented its evidence, put on its case, and tried to prove the contract that it alleges Eaton entered into. The court, the district court, saw the evidence, listened to the witnesses, considered their credibility, and made its findings of fact, and concluded there was no contract. Now, the district court made extensive findings of fact, but the basis for its decision on contract is very simple. It held that the parties had not agreed on terms. To prevail, Steinberg has to prove one of two things. Either first, that the law does not require that a contract have an agreement, or second, that there actually was an agreement in this case. And I would submit that it can do neither. The evidence on the record will not let it prove that there's an agreement, and the UCC and case law interpreting the UCC will not let it show that an agreement is no longer an essential element of a contract claim. Now, just to go to some of the contentions that Mr. Bickler made, with respect to the agreement between the parties and the specific agreement that is at issue in this case, and he claims is at issue in this case, I direct the court's attention to the testimony of John Baker. John Baker is the Steinberg employee who received the July 29th, 1999 letter. So at Supplemental Appendix 504 to 505, his testimony on transcript pages 416 through 417, he says in response to a question, did you agree to produce 13,000 units at an average price of $544.88 by July 29th, 2001? Did you agree to do that? No. That's in the letter, correct? That's in the letter. That's what you say is the contract, correct? Yes. And you never agreed to do that, correct? Correct.
Well, can you address the issue of apparent authority? In other words, Davis sends this email to Baker on May 27th of 99, stating, my job title does not allow me to mediate that discussion. So if that is a limiting issue, I believe you should directly request that commitment from Lisa. Did that give Steinberg the impression that Lisa Fletcher was authorized to enter into contracts on...
Well, in terms of whether it gave them that understanding, it's clear from the evidence that they did not actually have the belief that Lisa Fletcher alone was able to commit Eaton as to all the terms of the alleged agreement. In Steinberg's first response to the July 29th, 1999 letter, it basically says two things. It says, first, 13,000 units is not enough. That's not going to cover our capital investment as of right now. We need at least 25,000 to 30,000 units. And very significantly, it says, Lisa, can you check with Miles Tuttle if 300 to 400 units per month is acceptable, because we can't make the 1,000 to 1,400 units. So it's clear even at that point that notwithstanding any communications from Mr. Davis, that additional authority is needed, that Lisa Fletcher by herself can't make a decision as to changing the terms of the agreement or coming to a final agreement between the parties. More importantly, with respect to the issue of Ms. Fletcher's authority, the district court expressly found that she did not, in fact, come to any agreement with the parties. The district court expressly rejected the contention that Mr. Bickler made that Ms. Fletcher accepted the quote. In fact, it came to the conclusion that that claim was erroneous and that based on Steinberg's own business records, that any evidence of an oral acceptance was inaccurate and unreliable. Specifically, Steinberg introduced business records, which it said was the best record of its communications with Eaton. In those business records, throughout the period of time from September 1st to the end of September, there is no evidence that Steinberg accepted the supposed quote. In fact, on September 27th, 1999, the date that Steinberg claims that Eaton accepted the proposal, it shows that there was no conversation with Eaton. That John Baker left a message, and in this message, he stated that he asked whether it is real and said, we have no info on it with respect to this this alleged order. So it's clear from that record that even at that point, Steinberg did not believe that they had an agreement with Eaton.
You know, the district court found that both companies had policies of requiring contracts to be in writing. Was each company aware of the other company's policy? And where in the record would we find evidence that Steiberg knew that Eaton required all contracts to be in writing?
Well, there's a point in Mr. Baker's deposition where examination where they discuss Eaton's blanket purchase order. The language regarding written agreements on Eaton's side is found on the front page of its blanket purchase order. Mr. Baker basically said he'd seen that blanket purchase order, he'd read that blanket purchase order, and he understood that blanket purchase order. And so he testified that he'd seen that page, and if he wasn't aware of that specific language, it's only because he didn't review what was in front of him. With respect to Steiberg's policy, which says that the only effective order is an order that it has actually accepted in writing, that's found on the front page of its quotation forms. Now, it sent a number of quotation forms to Eaton, and it admitted that this language, which says that an order is effective only when accepted in writing, it admitted that that language is found on all of the quotation forms, and specifically found on the quotation form that was sent on September 9th, 1999.
What about the release of the 240 seconds after the first shipment, then the release, and then the rescission or whatever they did, cancellation of it? Those were already constructed, supposedly under some kind of an agreement.
Well, the agreement that's alleged, and it's very clear from the record that the agreement is alleged, is, as your colleague pointed out, 13,000 units, an average price of $544.88. That's the agreement that's at issue before this court. Testimony from Steiberg's own employees, and specifically John Baker, who was a specific contact with Eaton, and Ron Jones, who is their vice president of manufacturing and was responsible for determining whether Steiberg could perform on the alleged agreement. Both of them stated very clearly that if Steiberg were to charge the price charged on that shipment, $626, which would be $595 plus $31 additional cost, if it were to charge that, that would be inconsistent with the alleged contract. Jones actually said that with respect to performance, the $626 charge, that there's no way that performance under those terms, under that quote, is consistent with the contract that Steiberg is alleging. That the shipment was made at that price doesn't actually prove the contract, because their own employees said that's inconsistent with the contract that we're claiming. So I would submit that there was a significant amount of controversy throughout the parties' relationship. This is not a matter where Eaton purchased only 240 units. They had a month-to-month relationship. They placed orders with Steiberg. Steiberg would ship the orders. Steiberg would invoice Eaton. Eaton would pay the invoices. The record reflects that there was disputes both before shipments were made and then even after shipments were made and payments were made as to what was the correct price to be charged. And actually, one of the topics at the September 1st meeting was the appropriate price with respect to several shipments that had come before, and Steiberg had to adjust the price after the fact. I would submit that given that Steiberg had been charging a significantly higher amount, the fact that Eaton paid a lower amount when it was invoiced and there was controversy as to the subject of pricing shows only that Eaton was willing to pay invoices that it received.
Eaton was what?
Eaton was willing to pay the invoices that it received when there was a reasonable amount of money. And given that it was, I think, $200, $250 less than it previously been charged, I don't think that there's any reason Eaton would question that invoice.
There's another. This product is being produced by somebody other than Steiberg, obviously. But
I don't think the record reflects that.
I thought it did. Maybe not. I saw it somewhere. But
there was some discussion. My understanding, and I'm not sure this is in the record, is that it's no longer being produced. The technology has sort of gone by the by.
Oh.
There was a discussion. What's in the record is that there was discussion at the time as to whether this was a viable source at the price that was being charged. And ultimately, because the parties were never able to come to any agreement at a price and under terms that Eaton and Steiber were willing to accept, then Eaton was forced to seek at least some of the parts from another source.
Well, okay. I guess I was wondering, is this stuff, I assume what they did purchase, the 240 units were used.
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I mean, clearly there was some kind of an agreement here because you accepted, you know, 240 units.
Well,
and you paid for them.
Well, as I said, it's undisputed that the parties had a business relationship. Stretching back to 1996, Steiberg and Eaton cooperated in the development and production of these parts. Eaton actually purchased 1,500 units over the life of the relationship and paid prices ranging from, I think it was $825. Actually, it was more than $1,000 early in the relationship, ranging from $1,000 down to the $627.
Yeah, I know. The 1,540, right. That's that 1,540. So all in all, it's 1,540?
All in all, I believe it's 1,540.
Okay.
Units.
So
including the 240.
Including the 240.
That's subsumed in
right.
The...
So there was a relationship, and the relationship was, as I said, it was month-to-month. Eaton would issue orders. Steiber would produce the parts, the units based on those orders, invoice, ship, and get paid on that basis. So the 240 units were requested by Eaton, produced, shipped, and paid.
Where were they in the sequence of that 1,500 or whatever it is?
That, I think, was the last.
That was the end of the line.
That was the end of the line.
And then the next, whatever they call it, the release, that one was canceled. So
right. At the time, Eaton had built up significant inventory of these units, and they weren't sure what was going to be happening with them. They weren't sure that there was going to be a need for this unit any further. Now, with respect to Mr. Bickler's contention on the mirror image rule, the district court nowhere mentions the mirror image rule. The UCC is very clear in that it didn't eliminate the common law requirement that a claim for breach of contract must show offer, acceptance, and mutual agreement. Agreement is, whether the UCC is in place or common law is in place, agreement is an element of a claim for contract. The district court held that there was no agreement in this case, therefore, there was no enforceable contract. Now, at points in this litigation, Steiberg has claimed that its obvious rejection of Eaton's proposal is somehow irrelevant because it could reject the proposal but still create a contract. That, I think, is where this confusion about the mirror image rule is. However, the UCC is also very clear in that if you reject a term over which the parties had expressly negotiated, a dickered over term, then that rejection terminates the offer. That rejection can't form a contract. The parties negotiated over essentially all of the terms in Ms. Fletcher's letter. They negotiated the overall volume. Eaton offered 13,000. As I said, Steiberg's initial response to that was that 13,000 is not enough. It doesn't cover what they need, and they wanted at least 30,000 units. They negotiated over price. Steiberg's letter, or Eaton's letter, requires a flat $544.80 price. And as I said, Steiberg's quotations always have this $31 increase unless Eaton were to change its design. Eaton was negotiating over the length of the contract. Eaton wanted a two-year contract. Steiberg wanted to push that up further. And as I said, never agreed to produce pursuant to that term. They negotiated over the, in particular, the monthly production. Eaton was insistent during negotiations that Steiber would be able to produce 1,000 to 1,400 units per month. Ron Jones, the vice president for manufacturing, Steiberg said that that was impossible, that there's no way that they could accept that term. He also testified that there's no way that 13,000 units belonged in the party's agreement. Because
in the meantime,
is
some production going on?
Pardon me?
Is some production and delivery going on during all these negotiations?
Yes.
Must be.
On a month-to-month basis.
Yeah, and so this is just kind of a okay, you get another shipment, and then, but they keep talking about what the long term is, even though we're going to.
Right. Steinberg wanted to work out a specific long term agreement. Eaton was willing to do that. Eaton proposed a 13,000 unit contract under specific terms, but that wasn't good enough for Steinberg. They rejected those terms. Ultimately, what this comes down to is a story of rejection and regret. Eaton proposed specific terms for a 13,000 unit contract. Steinberg rejected those terms. It thought it could do better. It wanted better. And in fact, according to its own witnesses, it needed better. Ultimately, the parties never came to an agreement. As the district court found, there was no oral acceptance of terms. There's no contract formed. So after the fact, Steinberg regretted having rejected the terms and tried to stitch together something further.
Well, implicit in what you say is that the continued production, that Steinberg wasn't going to make any money.
Well, based on that contract, that's my understanding of what they testified to in court, is if it was a 13,000 unit contract, that wasn't going to be enough to cover the money they'd already spent. They had a relationship that they were trying to build up to, but that, you know, that relationship never came to fruition.
Thank you, Mr. Barreto. Mr. Bickler.
Court, please. There are many things that have to be corrected here. There were three phrases to this: prototype, LQR, limited quantity release, and then full production. This contract was about what will you do for full production. There were 90 units of prototypes, over 2,000 limited quantity release, and this was the first for full production that was ordered. There was no rejection ever of the 13,000 unit at 544 cents. It was agreed to. Baker said, thank you. Now let's figure out the schedule. Steinberg never rejected the contract in any way. This contract was formed under the UCC, which says that a contract is formed in any manner, including the conduct of the parties. When Eaton said, go ahead, we got to get you up to speed by the contact of the parties, both people put those 13,000 units in their information system. Eaton released some, paid for them at the agreed contract price. The misquote that Mr. Barreto did relating to Baker's testimony, that's contradicted by the 9999 proposal, which the parties agreed that the schedule would not be within 2 years, but would terminate in April of 2002.
But Mr. Baker, didn't the district court, though, reject the Baker testimony on that?
If the district court rejected the Baker testimony, it did so with absolutely no basis. It did so in contradicting the evidence that the parties thereafter went into production. They released units. They paid for units at that price. And so we have a judge who arbitrarily and capriciously at best, what he did was he just took whatever they submitted and put in a record, and that we'll accept. He can do it that way if he doesn't want to think it through. But he never addressed formation of the contract under the UCC, which says that contracts are formed by the conduct of the parties. And these parties, by their conduct, performed, both sides, in short. What they did here is they talked the talk, they agreed. They walked the walk, they put it in their systems, and then in addition, they showed the money. They said, release some, we pay for them on that reduced price. Both sides have performed, and they have agreed to the 13,000 units.
Thank you, Mr. Bickler. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.